You're listening to Alternative Currents. I'm Bella Johnson. I first heard of Bradford Keeney in Utney Reader, where he talked about his journeys into the Kalahari Desert to dance the ecstatic dance with the Bushmen. At the time, I believe it was about 2 years ago, I thought, boy, if I could talk to this guy, I'd love to get him on the radio. As destiny deemed it, I received a copy of his new book, Bushman Shaman, from Inner Traditions, Bear & Company, a couple of months back, and I'm delighted to have him on our show today. He's billed out as, quote, a distinguished scholar of cultural studies for the Ringing Rocks Foundation, which leads expeditions throughout the world to study cultural healing practices, and a cultural anthropologist at the Mental Research Institute in Palo Alto, California. Also the author of Shaking Out the Spirits, Aesthetics of Change, and Everyday Soul, and is editor of the Profiles of Healing series. J. Wall Jasper, then editor of Utney Reader, says he's the guy with the best job in the world, and I think he's just got to be one cool dude. So, Brad, welcome to Alternative Currents.
Thank you so much. It's good to be on the program.
Thank you. Brad, you've been around a while, but I honestly only heard of you through that Utney article, so I'm going to presume you might be new to many listeners as well and would like you to give a little history of your background and kind of what led you to exploring the shamanic traditions of the Bushmen, if you wouldn't mind.
Well, I think I've done my best to remain obscure and to stay as far away from Euro-American culture as I possibly can, particularly for the last 15 years where I've had the great fortune to be able to just disappear off edges of the earth and to live amidst some of the indigenous elders and to learn and be adopted as a grandkid with all these beautiful people that if you meet them, you just wish that more than anything they would become your grandfather or grandmother. But prior to all of that, I did have an experience with the world of universities and scholarship, and I'm an MIT dropout. I won the International Science Fair, went to MIT, and then dropped out to play jazz piano. And that took me from the classroom to the bar, and I think there's as much to learn from each of those contexts. But I always have felt the callings and stirrings of spirit, and by that I mean to be spirited rather than being spiritual. The latter is a bit too serious. If you get too serious, I don't think you can have the kind of spiritual experience we all really want. So, jazz improvisation became one of my teachers, and I think it was the skeleton key that enabled me to fit and find ways of connecting and being part of the most ancient ways of drawing forth the spirit and working it in ceremony and in ecstatic ritual. My story, I did write in the book you mentioned, Bushman Shaman, and sort of laid the truth as I experienced it, good or bad, and with all the blemishes. And it's been a remarkable journey. I want to say up front something I thought last night. I woke up in the middle of the night thinking, what in the world will we talk about, and what should I say, what should I not say? I'm going to say something I didn't think I would say, and that is, there's a lot of us looking for it. I mean, whatever metaphor you need to use to evoke this it. But there is something that's calling the deepest part of our being. We want it. We want to embrace it. We want to be held by it. And if we ever get it, we never want to let go. And I just want to shout that I found it. I mean, it's there. And I know others have. And so many of us are just a little shy about saying it. But I say that to encourage everyone to not stop the journey to find it. And the it I talk about is a joy that brings great forgiveness and not a feigned humility, but it does bring you down to realize no one's better than another person. So it's a true humility in that way, but it just makes you want to love everyone as a brother and sister and get on with the more important things rather than all this nonsense that is just pervaded most of our classrooms and institutions, to thinking we should try to, you know, strive to be one up on some kind of hierarchy, whether it's power, spirituality, money, or whatnot. And I must say, having studied with some of the great teachers of our culture, some of them Nobel laureates, and some of them very distinguished writers and some great spiritual teachers. I found that I didn't really learn the most important things. It wasn't until I went to faraway places, some places not so far away, in neighborhoods close by, and found people who barely had read a book, in some cases didn't know how to read, and in other cases didn't even come from a literate culture. There was no written word for their entire civilization from its beginning. And there I really learned to get on my knees and find those existential truths that just not only embrace you, but lift you high and make you want to jump, shout, and dance.
See, I love this movement part because as a kid, I was raised Mormon, so it was a pretty strict kind of restrictive religion. And about the time I was 14, 15, 16, I just had had enough of it. So I, like you, went to a black church. And the movement and the ecstasy and the joy, at the time, I didn't have the wherewithal to really get into it and move, but it really spoke to me in a way that was visceral. So I found your approach and how you kind of came about relating better to your own sense of spirituality through movement to be pretty personal. I remember sitting in classrooms and just feeling like I couldn't stand to sit one more minute. Always loved to dance, but couldn't stand dancing in bars. You know, always wanted to move. And even now, when so many of my friends and peers and contemporaries are sitting attempting to meditate, I've got to get out and move. I can meditate, but I like to do it best either during movement or after movement. But it just seems so poignant to me that you talk about this movement piece.
Well, there is a hunger of our whole being, our body, to move in a way that the metaphor of dance doesn't quite fit. Because dance brings with it, you know, the idealization of some form that needs to be perfected and choreographed, and we're so mindful of how we're looking and whether it's cool, hip, and all this kind of stuff that gets in the way. But those kind of spontaneous movements that took, you know, place in the being fidgety as a kid, you talk about, you know, we all had that. All of us, I think, recall, if we were going to be honest about it, the classroom, whether it be elementary school, high school, or even the university, is really as many long hours spent in trying to stay awake. It was just unbelievable how much effort it took, for me at least, and many people I've talked to just stay awake in these settings. And you just wanted to squirm and move, and of course the younger you are as a child, the more of those movements and finger tapping and toe tapping, all that took place. Well, lo and behold, I found that there are places in the world that saw that as important and not something to be extinguished. For us, teachers and parents would say, you know, be still, stop that, you know, settle down. And by the time we're an adult, we've stopped all this kind of goofy movement and rocking and swaying, and we find ourselves even more in the fight of trying to stay awake. So there's something about movements that are early psychologists used to call automatisms. We all know this from rocking in a rocking chair. You sit in that rocking chair, and it sort of grabs you, and you don't feel like you're rocking, but it's rocking you. You've been caught by an automatism, an automatic, spontaneous, free movement, if you wish. And that's just one. You get into the black church, and if it's really sanctified, as they like to say, and the Spirit's working on you, you're going to just feel like you turned into a puppet, like strings attached to every part of your body, from the feet to the hands to the arms to the hips, and all of a sudden you're going to get moved. And it might go past moving into something scientifically called shaking. You just might shake and tremor and tremble. And this, of course, is the heart of the African diaspora, the body feeling the life force upon it, or the spirit, or Noom Kundalini, whatever you need to call it. It just gets in you, on you, and it works you. And this working of the spirit is the greatest ecstatic feeling the earth has to offer. And when you get that, that's the it you're looking for. But first, when you get it, it might sort of freak you out because it's like you're not in control of it. It's moving you. And the shamans around the world, I found, are all looking for ways to make this hookup, to having the spirit work them. And when it gets on their body, gets in their whole being, you'd shake, you tremble.
Yeah, I remember watching. I grew up in the Los Angeles area, so it wasn't in Maine that I discovered these things, but I remember watching little black kids and just being so drawn to that culture where people were so free with movement, and no matter how I might have wanted to do it, I kind of still sat as an observer. I have my own thoughts as well about why we seem to fear what you call the African body electric, but I'd like you to talk about what this body means to you, both personally and how you describe it in your writings, as well as what you feel about these cultural fears of ours.
Well, I like to think, or I think that the the last great taboo for the Euro-American culture is the African electric body. That is the body filled with ecstatic realization and the freedom to express it. And, you know, we're not uptight about much of anything else. We've done about everything there is with words, and we've done about everything there is with talking about and sometimes performing sexuality and artistic expression. But when it gets to having the spirit work our bodies, then we sort of think, well, that's either psychotic or, you know, worse, it's somehow evil has taken one in some kind of Haitian voodoo thing. The latter, of course, being completely misunderstood by most eyes. By the African electric body, I mean literally the spirit getting on us, and then it works us, and may make us want to jump. We've seen this in the Pentecostal Christian churches, in the black churches, and we've seen it in those kind of rare film footages of the Haitian voodoo ceremony. But this kind of ecstatic body expression is everywhere, and it's often hidden. Even the Tibetans, their great oracle, whom the Dalai Lama consults with, goes into these kinds of tremors and convulsive fits. But it's kept private, not shown. The Native Americans of North America have had very powerful ceremonies, but when the missionaries, some missionaries and American politics saw this kind of ecstatic performance, they banned sacred dancing and songs. And then they went into the dark. So you have the shaking tents of the Algonquins and the Ojibwe, and those are ceremonies of a shaking body, but hidden from the view of others. So wherever you look in the world, from the Far East to North America to the rural churches of Louisiana, you'll find bodies yearning for the expression of spirited movement. And in some cases, history has sort of put it in a position to be hidden so it doesn't alarm the those who might look from the outside and not see it. And even in the mainstream churches, we had groups called Shakers and Quakers. Well, they weren't named that for an intellectual reason. They were named that because sometimes it took 12 people to hold somebody down because they got so much spirit on them. Even John Wesley, who is regarded as one of the founders, if not the founder, of the Methodist Church, would work people up to such an extent that you would think you were in the middle of the Congo. So there's something elemental, fundamental, basic about being human that involves letting ourselves go fully, not partially, letting ourselves go fully to being grabbed by the spirit. And if you're more comfortable, I'll say grabbed by chi, grabbed by ki, grabbed by kundalini, grabbed by Holy Spirit, whatever metaphor. There's so many names we've tried to use to talk about the universal life force. And when it grabs you, moves you, you find that it has a natural healing. It brings forth not only body healing, but spiritual and psychological well-being and sense of peace. And if you're an African, you're danced like this. That's different than saying you danced. You're danced by this spirit. Because it may not look like anything that ends up on a New York theater stage. It may look pretty wild and crazy, sometimes subtle, sometimes not subtle, usually not subtle. But you'll find that it becomes a teacher, that as you submit your body more and more to being worked upon by the spirit in this way, it begins to rewire you, to teach you in ways that can't be articulated or seen. You just find yourself having found the teacher you were always looking for, and it's housed in your own body. There was a great healer I had the opportunity to be like a son with her, and her name was Osami Sensei in Japan. She was the healer for many of the old Japanese families, and she would say, the teacher everyone is looking for is that of their own body, and you'll know it when it starts to rock, when it starts to move. And maybe it sounds too good to be true for a lot of our listeners, but I can assure you, having read many books and seen many teachers and hear a lot of talk, first-hand experience, the spirit grabs your body, takes hold of you, and you submit to that being a part of your life. In fact, you submit to that being the most important principle, most important experience in your life, everything will change. And then you can say, I found it. Or rather, it found me, and I said yes, and jumped with joy.
I would like to remind listeners, we're speaking today to Bradford Keeney, or with Bradford Keeney, author of Bushman Shaman, as well as other works. Bushman Shaman on the shelves, bookshelves now, put out by Inner Traditions Baron Company. Brad, how does one precipitate this movement? How does one begin to invite spirit in? I know in Africa and in other places, there's a community, a supportive community, where that can happen. But what about little pockets of New England? You know, what about places that's not so apt to be found?
Right. Well, that is the big question. And certainly if we, again, go back to Africa and think, you know, what kind of community do they have? And I've spent a number of years, decades, with numerous cultural groups there, in particular the Bushmen, who are arguably the world's oldest living tradition, oldest culture on the planet. So they can then be said to have the oldest way of healing and worshiping and communing with the divine. And when you look at that culture, it's like, this is all life is. That question is what they're asking every day, seeking. They're looking for ways in which their natural world will trigger this way of jumping with ecstatic joy, whether it's holding a dance or being in a conversation. In fact, if you hang out in the Kalahari with a Bushman shaman, you may just be looking for water or hunting, and all of a sudden the spirit comes on you, and you just jump and start to shake, and all the people around you start to clap, and there the dance begins. It wasn't scheduled. It just came on them. Now, when you get to New England or the Midwest or Europe, and you wonder, you know, how can we bring this into our lives? Well, we find that it's snuck into our lives from time to time already. You mentioned as a kid you couldn't stop moving. Well, that's true for all children. All kids come into the world wanting to move and sway. And we've also had the teacher of the rocking chair. We've felt that kind of automatism. And when we've been into rave clubs, rock and roll concerts, Grateful Dead performances, all these scenarios, you know, we feel that energy grabbing us. We feel it. And if we have the opportunity to visit a black church or even watch Leap of Faith with Steve Martin on the movies, in a movie house or on a DVD, you see it, you feel that energy, and you feel it tugging you. What's different is we haven't learned that we can submit to it, and furthermore, that submission to it leads to a journey of finding how our body brings us along into opening itself. See, every one of us is wired to do this. You just have to somehow say, yes, I want to push the button that says, let her go. And in the beginning, it may be subtle, small, or maybe, you know, wild and extreme. But if you cultivate an openness and grant yourself a permission and feed your inner desire to have this movement upon you, it will come. If you say yes, it will come. And furthermore, I know there was a time in my career where I would take a month or two to not be in the field and just sort of show up in a place that had invited me to bring some drummers and say, let's do this. And people say, oh, I know what you're going to do. You're going to do this kind of free movement. You're going to teach us to dance, to awaken the spirit. And it's like, forget that. Forget the notion of dance. We'd talk like you and I are talking. Then all of a sudden we put the drums on, you know. That big drum would just come on, and all of a sudden I would just tease people and say, don't think about yourself trying to be cool. Don't try to look hip. As some old church mother told me once, you got to get dirty for the Lord. All of a sudden, people just feel it. People start to shake, move, tremble. It happens. And people are shocked to know that they're as ready to be in an African ritual as anyone who grew up in the midst of the Kalahari. So we're just already primed and set to go. And I think the fact that we have not created opportunities to bring this forth, and we haven't respected it when it does sneak out of ourselves, and we are not making it the most important aspect of our life, means that we get all these weird things that are unique to our culture, being depressed, frustrated, irritable, you know, relational difficulties and so forth. Among the Bushmen, as soon as anyone in the community feels irritable, they say, we got to dance. If someone's not feeling well or feeling tired, we got to dance. And by dance, again, I mean these kind of movements, you know, not a sock hop and not a rock concert and not a being in a bar, but letting go in the kind of ways we're talking about. So we're all ready for it. We're all ready to be awakened by the rhythms of the drum and the pullings and tuggings of the spirit. And it's no accident that the Bushmen shamans believe that the universe of spirit is an array of ropes, strings, and threads. And one of the discoveries my colleagues and I just made in the last 2 years, because people have always wondered, how do the Kalahari Bushmen, and people know the Bushmen if they've seen the film, The Gods Must Be Crazy.
Oh, sure.
You know, it's the Coke bottle people. How do they have this? They're famous. They're famous for the tracking skills. They can just locate an animal and tell you en route, you know, when's the last meal it had and whether it's a male, female, how do they know all of this? Well, we found that they believe that every human being is connected by ropes, not only to one another, but to all the animals. And when there's a tug of this rope, you feel it in your body, and they just allow themselves to be tugged to the animal. They allow themselves to be tugged to each other. So the world of shamans is one of, in some kind of funny way, I guess, all of us being marionettes, strings coming out of every part of our body, connected to all the other strings. And they're pulling, they're tugging. We have to learn to respond to those tugs. I think it's what we call having a feeling in the gut. You know, you just feel the calling, the pulling, the tugging, and you'll learn to respond to it.
Yeah, we're Westerners, though. We're so scared of what's going to happen if that gut opens up. You know, what might happen if our kundalini arises, you know?
Right.
I mean, truly, and I guess I'm of the belief that if you really are connected to spirit or calling that force, nothing's going to happen that will be unsafe in some way. But again, that community setting seems so attractive. You know, wouldn't it be better to do this with others?
Absolutely.
Just in case. But why not put on some Gabriel Roth or Mickey Hart or Michael Harner's shamanic drumming and just move to the drum and see what comes up? Can that happen too?
Right. Well, and if you go to those venues, what you find is just sort of a knock-knock at the door. But if you really get revved up, you know, even there, those venues are uncomfortable with really letting it go. You see, if you go, let me say that again in a different way, starting in a different place. Our culture really has not experienced anything like Africa, even in the places that you mentioned. Those are very controlled environments. They're very much related to dance and to kind of bring, and they're all wonderful teachings in their own way. But they're very short of what I'm talking about. And I can run it through in this kind of way. Imagine going to a charismatic church, and you know people will speak in tongues, and they'll jump up and down and wave their arms. And maybe if the place is really sanctified in a rural Louisiana town, you might see a few people rolling on the ground. Mm-hmm. That's where they got the holy rollers. People actually lie on the ground and start spinning around, rolling. Now, if you go to Africa, you'll see those things, but it goes even further. And even the members of an African culture in the Kalahari have the same fear we have, because when you really get grabbed, it feels like you have lost control. So it's a stage of becoming familiar with these energies that enables you to not be scared of it. Everybody's scared of it around the world. But the communities, and this is what you point to, do know that it's okay to be scared, and it's okay to sort of learn how to be familiar with it. And what they then do is go a step further. And this is what I found to be remarkable, and to address the fear of kundalini accidents and all of these kinds of things that people have concern with when they go out of control and raise these energies. That is, unlike the practice of kundalini yoga, which is done in solo, and if you begin to have kind of difficulties, you're told to do a practice, but it's a practice done in isolation and solo. The loop of the energy is within your own body. Among the Bushmen, they would say that's the last thing you want to do.
Right.
You want to touch somebody. You want to make the loop, the circuit, larger. Run it through the community. There are no Kundalini accidents in the Kalahari. That was one of the big discoveries I was blown away by. Here's a culture that lives for the awakening of the life force and the living for its expression, but holds it in the social context so that if you feel the energy, you don't stand there in isolation or you're not in a cave in a yoga position. You're with others. You run to others and you touch them. It looks like spiritual tag. I got the shake on me. That's one way to, if I use words to make it, you know, sound like it looks, like somebody's got the energy. They're shaking, they're trembling, they're shouting, they're making, hi-ya, oh, all those kind of sounds come on them. People come to them. They want to be touched. So the trembling hands touch another. There's an embrace. Both arms wrap around another person. And sure enough, the tremble, the shake passes to another and then passes on to another. So you can see a whole community shaking together. In such a setting, you don't see Kundalini accidents. You'll see people sort of getting overheated, as they will say, and then others will come to them and stand on their feet or blow a little incense held in a turtle shell that the scent helps them cool down, or a blowing on the top of their head. There's all kinds of things to do in social relationship that help another cool down. As soon as they're cooled down, they like get hot again, and on they go. Dance may run through the night. And something else happens. When you move this way for an extended period of time, really letting it all go, you play out your body in the sense that the glycogen content of the muscles gets depleted. You just fall into a kind of absolute state of stillness and rest. You end up in the place that many people who meditate are trying to get through that kind of practice, but do so by allowing the body to arouse itself to a heightened peak and then to collapse into a great stillness. So the African shamans aren't just being the technicians and masters of ecstatic expression. They're going in a cycle of dancing and moving and shaking and then falling to the ground in great stillness, and often in that place experiencing the great visions, and then to be aroused again. And so the nature of healing is seen as a cycle of deep relaxation, you know, alpha-theta states, moving into great excitation. It's going back and forth effortlessly, naturally, as the body feels called, pulled, tugged to express itself.
Seems like a good time to take a break. You're listening to Alternative Currents today. Our guest, Bradford Keeney, author of Bushman Shaman, as well as other books. You're listening to Alternative Currents on Community Radio, WERU-FM 89.9 Blue Hill and 102.9 in Bangor. That's listener-sponsored, volunteer-powered, non-commercial, grassroots radio. Be back in a flash.
Oh, King of Kings, King of Kings, we kneel before you, Father, appealing, asking for peace in the rest of the country. Lord of Lords, we kneel before you, Father, appealing, asking for peace in the rest of the country. Our Father, we are asking for peace in the world. Our Father, we are asking for peace in the world. Our Father, we are asking for peace in the world. Our Father, we are asking for peace in the world. Reveal yourself, reveal yourself. Reveal yourself, reveal yourself. Reveal yourself, reveal from heaven. Because we are directing to you, to Almighty. We are directing to you, forever Almighty.
The sun,
rise and set.
Rise and set.
Rise and set. The sun, rise and set. Forever Almighty, your promise,
our Father, said, fear thou not, for I am with thee. Be not dismayed, for I am thy God, I will strengthen thee. Yea, I will help thee, yea, I will uphold thee, with my right hand of my righteousness. Reveal yourself. Reveal yourself, Almighty.
Reveal yourself.
Reveal yourself.
Reveal yourself.
Reveal yourself, Almighty.
Reveal yourself.
Reveal yourself. Reveal from heaven.
Reveal yourself,
Almighty.
Reveal yourself.
Reveal yourself. Reveal from heaven.
Reveal yourself, Almighty.
Reveal yourself. The sun rise and sets forever, Almighty.
Reveal yourself.
The sun rise and sets forever, Almighty.
And you've been listening to a little Ladysmith Black Mambazo off of Shaka Zulu. Welcome back to Alternative Currents and our guest Bradford Keeney, author of Bushman Shaman. Brad, you talk about, and it brings that up when I listen to this song that we've just been listening to, the different names for God and how someone who really embraces a shamanic practice or is a shaman would never judge the name by which God is called. And you also talk about the big God.
Absolutely. I mean, there's a funny thing I hear when I come back to the States, which is I hear people talking about, boy, I love being spiritual, but I just don't like religion. And I'm into having spirituality, but don't really relate very well to God talk. And you know, I try to think, what is people talking about? Because every place I've been in the world, the shamans can't stop talking about how much they love God, whatever name they have for he, she, it, they. And has great joy for anyone who's tapped into the desire to love the greater one. And that kind of distinction just confuses me. But I can clearly say that every shaman I've known from other cultures is about being for the big love of the big God. In fact, the two are inseparable. The big love is the big God, or is the way in which we realize, feel, express, relate, know, understand what is the divine. I want to also say that all our talk about letting go and being sort of wild and shaking and trembling and that is not just that in itself. I don't want to sound like if we all could, you know, get on a jet and head to the Kalahari, that all we would do is just sort of go crazy and have that kind of leap of faith. That's the way the expression looks and feels, but it's in a context where people recognize that no matter who you are, whatever journey you happen to be on, you're going to get hit by everything. You're going to get hit by the good luck, the bad luck. You're going to get hit by the blessings and the sufferings. And both are necessary. Both coexist. Both are teachers. And so when people come together in the Kalahari, the Black Church, they're coming with hopes, with suffering, and they're embracing all of them. And that interaction between the dark, the light, the despair, the hope, the pain, the good feeling, all of that interacts and is held in a kind of cradle that sort of, in this big mix of polarities, dances itself out. And in a way, that's sort of the shaking. The shaking's being danced in this web of many differences, the differences that constitute each of our lives. So you can't really find a spirit in a spirited place that's going to say, when you come through our doors, all you're going to get is the good times, and all you're going to get, you know, is financial reward or universal peace. What you're going to get if you walk through our doors is the whole show. You're going to hurt, you're going to have pain, but you don't have to run, take a medication, or patch it, or think there's something wrong with that. Embrace it, and in so doing, it'll also carry you to a great joy. But you come in with a great joy, and you let it be free, going to take you to the suffering, not to yourself, to others. It brings everything together. And that's something I think people in our culture like to run away from. You know, they want the quick, good time without all the other. And I'm not preaching that you need to, you know, dwell on suffering, but suffering is a great teacher to be as honored and to be seen as important as the ecstasies, which are inseparable from it.
Yeah, I think people who are practicing Buddhism, for example, get that. You know, they get that suffering is the nature of being in a body or whatever. But again, through the meditation, it's still conceptual. I mean, even through feeling compassion for another person, it's on that level. And because I haven't done this ecstatic dance, not to say I wouldn't love to do it, because I would imagine that would take it to yet another level of kinesthetic awareness and knowing beyond what we could even describe at times. Because I noticed throughout your book, there are times when I see you really struggling to just describe what went on.
Right. Absolutely. And, you know, I'm these days fond of saying, we're just about ready to discover that Africa is our mother. We know without doubt that's where the human species came from. That's just a given today. But it's also where spirited expression and creativity and all the ways of being human came from. And the African continent has been seen as locked up, forbidden, dark, far away, so misunderstood, so, you know, pathologized, so demonized. And I think the next spiritual frontier is opening the gates to Africa and being able to say, like Africans do, this is all of our mother. This is the mother for all of us. Then these kind of experiences you're talking about become free and available for every one of us. And we find, again, that it's already sort of trickled through. It's just hiding somewhere in a secret ceremony, or it's being suppressed or repressed in our own culture. And there will be this great awakening. Because as long as the body is not joined in the conceptual realizations that you mentioned, then we're going to be split. We're going to be continuing to enact the east-west divide through the mind-body split, because the whole of us isn't being moved by the realization. If it's simply in the conceptual domain, realized in a moment of stillness, you're still apart and not yet full in the whole. And I'm getting lost in my own words, forgive me, because it just makes me want to bring out a drum and you know, get us to moving. Because these things that are the truths of all mystics, whether they, you know, be from Islamic traditions, whether they be from Christian traditions or African traditions, the mystics do share the same knowing that when the great truths of the great love come upon you, you're going to tremble. You're going to weep. You're going to shout. You're going to feel the joy. You're going to be overcome in a way that makes you smaller, yet part of something bigger. You know, all that kind of, if I might say, double talk, both and, but with it, a body expression, a body electric. There's some wonderful holders of the spirit in the Caribbean who say there's just no way you can have the spirit on you. You can have the realization, the connection to the divine without feeling that electricity move throughout your whole being.
You mentioned in your book as well the linear versus the circular process, and you're kind of touching into that a bit now, that whole circular way that the Bushmen look at, or not even look at, but experience the world.
Yeah. Well, it's a, you know, I think one of the fascinating things I heard from some Bushmen elders had to do with, after a decade of being with them and going through all kinds of things, and we got the giggling one night. I said, look, after the anthropologists go home and people who come out to visit you, what's your name for us? You know, what do you call us? And they said, well, you all are the line people.
Yeah.
you think in terms of your lines. Everything in the world is a line. It's all simple causality, if I could put on my academic hat. It's like, if, as a professor, I would say, we assume that if this trauma happened to you, then you will be with this problem. And then if you have this biochemical disorder, you need this drug. Everything is just if A, then that, and you get the outcome. Lineal causality. Bushmen refer to themselves, because I asked them, what do you call yourselves? We are the circle people. What's that mean? And they said, well, our teacher isn't a textbook. No books teach us. We just look in nature, and we see that everything in nature is in a circle. It all continues to change. So I then asked them a question, which is probably the most important academic question I ever asked them, which was, what's the most important word in your culture? They said, Tuturu. Tuturu, T-H-U-R-U, if you were to spell it in our language. Tuturu is the name of the process that makes everything constantly change. No anthropologist had ever asked that question or even knew that word, because I consulted with them afterwards. And Tuturu, for them, means that we're all shape-shifting, or we better be. And if we stop shifting and we stop changing the forms, then we're stuck. And that kind of stuckness brings about irritability in relationships, brings about frustration in psychological being, and brings about sickness in the body. The purpose of the dance, the purpose of the shaking, is to let free how we're stuck and to move us again into being constant changing forms. And by that, it's as simple as they know that if they're in relationship, which of course it's unimaginable because they live so closely together, if a married couple were asked the question, do you love each other? Do you feel like you're in love? And they might say, well, right now, but yesterday I felt like killing her. You know, what? They realize that how you feel about another should be a circle, should be changing. You'll die for them, you want to kill them, you love them, you hate them, you're angry, you're happy. It's constantly changing, it's morphing. And health to them is that it's always morphing. If it stays stuck anywhere, well, we might connote as good or bad, then you got to dance yourself out of this being stuck and let it move around the circle. So and that includes sickness. If you get sick, you're not feeling well, then it's the stuckness. It's okay to not feel well, but it needs to move on. So the dance is an incubator, a cradle, a context, a happening, an event, a healing that enables the whole being to be, if you wish, shaken up, stirred so as to help Tuturu move you around the circle, around, around, around. It's no accident the dance is around a circle, around a fire in a circular form. Now that blows 99.9% of all Western psychology out the window. It shows there's something fundamentally wrong from a Bushman perspective about the line thinking of psychiatry, psychology, and medical science, because we're always looking for the pill to cause the cure of that. A Bushman would say, you're just going to make things messed up, mixed up. You need to let yourself move in the circle. Free yourself from being stuck anywhere. Now, I'm not proposing that you know what I have said is absolute truth in any shape or form. I'm telling you there's a culture out there that has lived on this planet far longer than we, who see us as lying people, lost, destroying the earth, blind to what it is that's bringing it about. And they say it's because we don't know how to see our experience, our action, our interaction, and our lives as circular. And they are praying that we get off our butts and start shaking and moving so we can get unstuck, because the lines and the working as line people are tearing the fabric of the greater web. So they're dancing probably as we speak somewhere in the Kalahari. There's Bushmen dancing, hoping that in our dreams we'll hear the music, and we'll say yes to shaking and moving in this way. And in so doing, be pulled more toward the truth of the circle rather than the limitations of the lines.
Again, we are speaking today with Bradford Keeney, author of Bushman Shaman. You're listening to Alternative Currents. Brad, what you're talking about, the circular relationship that the Bushmen practice with one another, is also reflective of what you speak of as the stable love of the sky god and the changing trickster forms of the trickster god. I mean, that goes around and around in a circle, does it not?
Yes. It's amazing because they're, for so many years, you have to realize the Bushmen are arguably the most studied culture in anthropology. And the anthropologists argue and fight over what their discourse and their way of living means, and on this has gone. And very important people have been there to study them. And so many of them concluded, I might say all of them concluded, that there's no real consistent understanding of their experiential and physical universe. It's always, seems like it's random and mixed up. If you ask a Bushman, what's the name of God? They might say, the God in the sky. But if you come back in a year or two and you ask, oh, yeah, tell me again, what's the name of the God? And they'll say, frog. Say, what? What do you mean, frog? Well, we hadn't had rain for 2 years and just rain. We heard the frog, so now it's frog. Even their name of God changes. It, too, is in a circle with many forms. It's morphing. Now, because the anthropologists did not see the importance of morphing and shifting in Tuturu as the most important idea in Bushman culture, they just assume they were primitive and did not have an elaborate understanding of how things should be semantically, you know, patched together in some big network of understanding. Now, what that means when you get to their understanding of the sacred is that just uttering the name of the big God is too subject to shapes and forms that constantly change. So you have the trickster element, and at the same time, you do have a stable element, but what remains stable is the big love, and it's the big love that's the operating principle. What is the shaking? What's the current? What's the electric? What's ki? What's chi? What is it that moves through us? Well, if you had to push a shaman to use words about this, I think you're going to hear something like, those are the currents of the big love. That's what the whole thing is about. Because for the shamans I've known, because I think there's a lot of people using the word shaman, a lot of people from even indigenous cultures use the word, they've really lost their roots. And you know it when they start talking about, it just makes me powerful, I can make more effective things, I can be more effective at making things happen, you know, all this kind of thing. But if you get to the cultures where the shamanism is still deeply intact, and you see that they're very present in the culture, the shamans don't sound any different than backwoods black preachers. They're talking about the big love. They're talking about when they're in ceremony and they're feeling the current, they're weeping because they feel the presence of their loved ones, those who've already gone on, their grandparents, their uncles. They're feeling that familial connection. They're feeling, I mean, what blew me away is an old blind Bushman shaman said, when you're a shaman and you feel this noom, this power, this love come on you, it makes you want to love even the man who stole your wife. And I went, whoa. That's not the kind of shamanism I read about in fantasies by books like Carlos Castaneda. You know, it's just like different reality. And I begin to realize there's a lot of lying going on, or misconception, or, pardon me for saying such strong words, there's a lot of creative writing going on about shamanism. And, you know, it's probably done a lot of wonderful good. And from a Bushman perspective, hallelujah, it's just another Tuturu. It's just another trickster form. But we haven't heard the great stable truth, which is it all comes down to the big love. And it just takes you to your knees and makes you both want to shout and weep for joy and become compassionate without any effort towards trying to reach for it. It just brings the compassion on you. And I think that is nothing more and everything but purest religion. You see, the joyous, ecstatic realizations of the founders of the world's great religions, whether they be Muhammad or Jesus, Buddha, whatever form, Zoroastrianism, I don't care whether it's Hinduism, I don't care whether it's from the South Pacific, Southeast Asia, whether it has multiplicity of forms and names. These people were touched by great love that made them tremble with joy and filled them with compassion. And those people, those individuals in our human history, were all the great shamans. If the Bushmen were to hear about them, they would say, oh yes, these are our brothers and sisters. These two were shamans. They were lightning rods. They held their hands high into the sky so the lightning bolts could be hurled through the atmosphere by the great gods, carrying the energy of a love that in turn could be shared with others simply through touch and making a joyful noise.
Brad, we have about 4 minutes left, and I didn't want to close the interview out without talking about dreams and dreaming, because I think that's such an integral part of this culture, the Bushman culture, I mean.
Yes.
And also some ways in which we might facilitate our own movement into that deeper world. I know I'm a dreamer, as you are, and definitely listen and follow my dreams. But could you speak a little bit about that?
Yes. Most shamans I've known, and Bushmen in particular, they do differentiate between, there are those kind of dreams we would call psychological. That's just kind of a recycling of autobiographical karma. You know, we just sort of recycle our stuff. And not to be given much importance by most shamans. But then there's another kind of experience in the night that they would call a visitation. That means it comes straight from the spiritual universe, or rather you're pulled into the spiritual universe. It's the same among the Aborigines in Australia and other cultures around the world who refer to these sacred visions. That is the place for schooling. You learn, you receive direction through that kind of dream. So, if you fill your body with the electricity of life and you say yes to being fully human in this way, that kind of dream comes to you. And it becomes a crossing. If you're an African healer, becomes a crossing to meet the ancestors, to be taught new songs, to be taught direction, to be taken care of, to be healed yourself, to be shown how to help others. In the world of dream, we find the university, the high school, the nursery school, for becoming a spirited human being. That's where you go. The great workshops, the great training, they're in dream.
Sometimes literally, too.
Literally. Oh, yeah. I mean,
sometimes literally I'm in a school, you know, over and over again, sitting in a school. So it's
wonderful.
It's, yeah.
That's what it is. In St. Vincent in the Caribbean, they call a little tiny room in the back of a praise house a spiritual high school. And when you receive a dream that you need to seek a dream, just like in the ancient Greek dream incubation, you have to first have a dream that you need to go have a sacred dream. You go to this little place, and they put you in the room, and you fast for usually a week. And then the visions come on you, and you share them with the community. And that's called spiritual high school.
We've got a minute. Anything you want to say in closing?
Well, what can we say? All we can do is celebrate through the way we talk about the truths of these matters to somehow convey that, yes, there is something worth living for and something worth dying for. It's free. It's available to everyone. It doesn't require a book. It just requires opening your heart. And your heart can be opened through its suffering by being ripped open. And don't patch it. Let that opening be a way to find connection to the greater gifts that await every one of us. And when you get those kind of gifts, whew, all you want to do is share it. Just want to pass it on. And that's all there is. no less, no more. It's everything. And I just wish I could reach through the phone line and we could just grab each other, turn on the drums or turn on some music and just dance ourselves through the day and through the night. And like they used to do in days of old in Africa, we just do it for day after day after day. You know, sometimes they would have a ceremony and they'd go for 4 days and nights. They just danced till they collapsed. When they collapsed, they would just go into the world of dream.
Thanks so much for being with us today. Bradford Keeney, author of Bushman Shaman, as well as other works. I wish you all the best in your life and in your work. Thanks for being our guest.
Oh, thank you. It's been a great pleasure.
I know Jesus is on that main line. Tell him what you want. Jesus on that main line. Tell him what you want. Jesus is on that main line. Tell him what you want. Call him up and tell him what you want.
Thanks for listening to Alternative Currents. This is Bella Johnson. We're listening to Alternative Currents on WERU-FM 89.9 Blue Hill and 102.9 in Bangor. And thanks to Joel Mann, my wonderful and ever-present engineer. Have a good month.